Morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center. Meteorologist Adam Carroll, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, we actually have a weak cold front moving through northern Utah as we speak. It is dragging some clouds into northern Utah after what was a relatively clear start to the day. But we've already seen, at least on local web cameras up in northern Utah, some snow showers falling in the mountains. There'll be a little bit of snow shower activity here for our Wasatch Mountains as that front progresses south here this morning, but it'll be short-lived here, an hour or two. The clouds eventually will actually move away as well, more fall south and east up here, and then we'll start clearing things out. So a very similar type of day today compared to yesterday, where we had the clouds early, sunshine late. So we're going to have the clouds early, sunshine late, and this is ahead of a stronger cold front tomorrow that will bring colder temperatures into the area, not only high temperatures, but also overnight lows. And that arrives with some additional snow shower activity tomorrow that will likely bring a little bit of snow to the Park City Mountains. Not a ton, though, for actually Park City proper. It might snow for a little bit, but accumulations are expected to be quite light, and it's just going to be more or less some clouds and temperatures only in the mid-20s for daytime highs. It will bring in wind, and we actually should stay rather breezy through the rest of the week. We'll be a little warmer on Thursday with high pressure and control. And then another storm, a bigger storm, comes in Friday into Saturday with accumulating snow for both Park City and the adjacent mountains, and will bring in colder temperatures as well back into the upper 20s for daytime highs. Now, morning lows will likely be in the single digits and teens for the remainder of the week, especially on Thursday morning with clear skies out there. But as we head past Saturday, we'll start to gradually warm back up to the upper 30s heading into next week with more sunshine out there. So a couple of different disturbances keeping things unsettled out there and a little bit more below normal for temperatures.
Okay, Adam, thanks so much.
You bet.
And with a look at the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, it's Nikki. Good morning, Nikki.
Good morning. So yesterday, ski area control teams and some backcountry travelers still noted sensitive cornices and some wet loose activity on steep south facing terrain as the slopes warmed up and it got sunny. In the Pink Pine area of White Pine and Little Cottonwood Canyon, there was one report of a shallow soft slab breaking about 18 inches deep just in the new snow on northeast aspect at 9,800 feet. Today we're going to be dealing with two issues, first being that persistent weak layer we keep talking about. As we get farther from the extreme danger of last week, it becomes increasingly tempting to step into steeper terrain. But we must continue sticking to the low-risk, low-angle terrain. We have a tricky snowpack structure, and we might not be presented with the obvious signs of instability, such as cracking and collapsing that we're used to. As well, if you see slope tracks on the slope, it doesn't offer any stability as well. So patience is required. We cannot smart this problem. You can trigger an avalanche 2 to 5 feet deep in an area where the slab is thinner. So that could be rocky terrain or areas that have previously avalanched. So we want to avoid those slopes. The central Wasatch will have a bit deeper slab, but we're most suspect about terrain in the periphery areas, which includes the Park City Ridgeline. So what we can do to deal with this problem is dig down and see if we can find those weak faceted snow and then avoid that terrain. Choose a completely safe up track, so making sure that you're somewhere that's not in avalanche terrain while traveling uphill. Make sure that you expose only 1% at a time. That means traveling uphill and traveling downhill. And know what's above and connected to you. These avalanches can be triggered from a distance or below. The second thing we're going to want to think about today is wind-drifted snow. The winds picked up overnight and are still cranking this morning. The high winds could deposit lingering snow on terrain features on almost any aspect at mid and upper elevations. As the winds continue to blow, these slabs are just going to get more stubborn and allow you to travel out farther onto the slope before it breaks. It can be larger and wider than you expect. As well, these winds increase the size of the cornices on many ridgelines. They're already huge and sensitive, so stay well back away from and avoid travel below cornice ridgelines. A triggered wind slab or cornice could step down at that weak facet of snow, so look for signs of wind-drifted snow and just avoid all those slopes. Today, we're going to have a considerable danger on many slopes at mid and upper elevations. It's most prevalent on the west to north to southeast facing slopes where the weak faceted snow exists or anywhere that has recently wind drifted terrain. As well, if the wind dies down, wet avalanches could be possible on the steeper sunlit slopes.
Okay, Nikki, thank you. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Later on, mental health counselor Katie Thomas has details about an upcoming small group teen girls resiliency program that she's offering throughout the month of March. Then Park City local and American Idol contestant Wyatt Pike telling us about getting on the show and when we might see his audition. Stay tuned. A reminder that the Park City Board of Education meeting today at 4 o'clock, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission also meeting. Again, the big item on their agenda, of course, is the Highland Flats public hearing. And Heber City Council meeting at 5 o'clock, and then Park City Mayor Andy Bierman with the State of Park City's address at 7. Well, the Summit County Council meeting tomorrow in work session to interview an applicant for a vacancy in the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District at 1:10. Then they'll close the session and reopen the work session at 2:30. On the phone with a preview is Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So at 2:45, there's a discussion of something called the CPACE program, which stands for Commercial Property Assessed Clean Energy. The staff report says that it helps to finance new construction or retrofits to equip buildings for renewable energy. So where's this program coming from?
Well, this was actually enacted by the legislature a couple of years ago, and you'll recall that we've had it in front of the subject in front of the council probably 2 to 3 times over the last 2 years. And part of what we were uncomfortable with, or the council was uncomfortable with over the past 2 years, was kind of how the program was going to be administered. There hadn't been a lot of experience in the state with this program, so not a lot of projects had been financed with it, and there was some back and forth between the state agency that was administering it and local governments about who should be carrying the bulk of the burden of scrutinizing projects and helping developers or those that are remodeling get through the process. What we've gained is that several cities and areas of the state now have used the program, and it is mostly being administered by the state, where the county's role comes in actually putting a lien on property debt to help with the financing of the project. So very little role for the county, but a big benefit if a project uses this program within the county.
So can you give me an example of what would we see if somebody used this?
Well, for instance, any type of energy efficiency project or part of a project that goes into either new development or redevelopment, whether that be heating and cooling systems that are more energy efficient, or energy generated by solar panels. These types of things could be financed through this program.
And that's why the county's involved then, this putting a lien on a property if the money...
Yeah, it all is, the reason that counties would be involved in this is because of that method of putting a lien on the property in order to support the financing.
Right. So if they were getting financing, the lien would be put on just like buying a new car or anything else, right?
Similar, yes.
Yeah. So what's the cost of the services agreement?
I don't know the specific, and I'm sure there's a cost built in, because there's a state agency involved that's going to have to recover some cost. But that relationship is between the private financer, the state, and that property owner that's making the improvements.
Okay, and when we talk about improvements, there are things that are allowed and not allowed,
I'm sure there are. The examples that have been given to me are, more efficient lighting fixtures, heating and cooling systems, EV chargers, site-generated power, whether that be by wind or solar or some other means. So a pretty broad range, but I imagine that it also has to do with treatments to buildings to have tighter building envelopes to be more energy efficient. Anything that would encourage more energy efficiency with the built environment.
Okay, and again, we're just talking commercial property as opposed to residential.
That is correct. This is a commercial program.
All right. Let's see. There's a report from Connect Summit County, which conducted a mental health attitude and access survey last fall. The survey measures a couple of things. One, what people know about mental health services in the county, and two, if people are reluctant or uncomfortable to admit that they need help. So looking at the report, do we have a problem?
I think Connect Summit County is projecting that there is a problem. And, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, just from my experience, I wouldn't say it's unique to Summit County. But certainly Connect's mission is in Summit County, so they're pointing out some of the areas where we have problems. You know, they brought up the issue of the clubhouse in Highland Estates that was approved last year, where there was just very what is probably looked at as uninformed opposition based on mental health issues and the folks that would be attending the clubhouse. And so they use that as an example of not only that there's an education problem within our community about mental health issues and how treating those can be both beneficial to the individual and the community, but also the stigma towards the individual and why sometimes individuals don't want to come forward and confront mental health issues. And it's because of some of the types of statements that were used to try and convince the council not to approve that project.
Mm. All right. Let's see. Later on, we've got we're hearing back from the subgroups on the Dakota Pacific project. We're talking with the land use, the density, housing, transportation, sustainability, and phasing subcommittees. The staff packet looks like the PowerPoint images and text are from Dakota. Can you just give us a kind of a sneak preview of what the subgroups are saying here?
Yeah, I'd really like the subgroups to report out by themselves. And, you know, I have not been involved specifically with the subgroups. I'm allowing staff to be involved with that, the attorney's office. And then obviously the council members are talking to staff, and then staff is talking to the developer. But I think it's a unique process that we're going through. So we're dealing with these different areas of this project, whether they be sustainability or affordable housing, and breaking down the project into those areas. And as you'll recall, back when when Dakota Pacific was first applying for their project, they had some ambitions that they didn't feel that they could fully represent, because some of those issues were out of their control. Based on, you know, whether they be more highway solutions that are kind of away from their property or transit solutions or, solutions that might take partnerships in order to actually achieve. And so I think the discussion has gotten to the level where they're more comfortable talking to the council about that, and certainly talking to staff and relating back to staff what they want to do to achieve some of those things within this project, if there are willing partners.
So in response to the feedback, has Dakota changed their plans at all?
I think they're ready to talk about how they could change their project. It's always a give and take at this point in the process of what the community needs within these projects and what a developer needs in order to make their project profitable. So I think that's where the level of discussion is getting.
All right. And you mentioned you're not on any of these subgroups, huh?
No, I'm not. I certainly trust our community development department and our county attorney's office to help shepherd the project through the process with the council, and I'm being kept up to date by staff.
All right, and then what's the timeline on this? How long does
It's going to take how long it takes. I think the ambition is to try and wrap this up within a couple of months, but sometimes these discussions will take longer depending on the topic. I think we're going to find out that some great communication and progress has been made in talking about these issues over the last few weeks.
All right. Let's see, a legislative update on some of the specifics. House Bill 115, the bill on cross-boundary annexation, is calling for a feasibility study. What would this do?
Well, I mean, any annexation in the past under former law, besides what happened with Hideout in this last year, required some type of feasibility study to understand everything from service load and tax load, both on the incorporated area and the unincorporated area, so the county, to understand what that disparity was going to be, or what that result was going to be from an annexation, so that those two governments, and if need be, the state would discuss those items and decide whether annexation was a good idea or if it need to be adjusted in order to make things whole for both entities. So I think that's the idea here, is we want to make sure that we're not just running into these types of issues and ignoring the fact that there's local governments and constituents on both sides that need to be protected through these processes. So that there, hopefully there's benefit to everybody in these types of things.
Now, the staff report also notes that Wasatch County wants a fix in this bill, something to do with Bonanza Flat. Do you know what that's about?
I've heard about that. I'm assuming it has something to do with Bonanza Flat, and then of course that brings in Park City Municipal and Wasatch County, but I don't know the particulars of it.
All right. And so far this year, it looks like Summit County is not promoting any particular bills. Are we just playing defense this session?
It does seem like we're on defense for a lot of different stuff. We were kind of joking about that in our organizing meeting yesterday internally. Really within the last 2 weeks, it's where we can just keep our eyes wide open, our ears open, and our feelers out for things that might hurt or help us. I'll give you a couple of examples of that. The bill that we've talked about before, which changes thresholds for class of county, well, we were successful in working with UAC and other counties in kind of maintaining the status quo for Summit County and some other counties for what class they were going to belong to. We just saw a bill by Senator Harper come out on housing and transit reinvestment zones that right now only applies to transit districts in cities. Well, there's a possibility that our transit district, as a small transit district within an unincorporated area, could benefit from that type of investment zones. And so we're looking at that to see if there's any possibility of a language change to open up that aperture a little bit.
All right. Finally, I just wanted to bring up that there's a letter to UDOT about the Kimball Junction traffic alternatives, mostly informing them of the consensus that Summit County has heard before the county council. Option one is confusing, that the council doesn't like option two. They seem to be most in favor of option three. So what's next here?
Well, I think all of that input, and of course we've seen input come in from the Dakota Pacific folks as well, from different areas and individuals within the county. UDOT needs to take that all into consideration as they progress to the next step of analyzing the different options, probably dropping some or taking pieces of some to reform a different option. To go into the final phases of this study, which will determine what the preferred alternative is that will be then go into environmental clearance for a future project.
Okay, and when we talk about a future project, how far off in the future are we talking?
Well, it all depends on the will of the local governments, the will of property owners around that area, so Kimball Junction, and of course the will of the Transportation Commission. Things can move quickly based on how dollars are allocated, and I think that the county is ready to step up in many different ways, not just through sales taxes, but through different types of financing mechanisms. I just mentioned a reinvestment zone that could apply to this type of area that's in legislation. This is going to take some creative financing because we're talking about a very expensive project. I could certainly see this happening if there was will within the next 5 years.
And then option number four, I think that was where there are a number of kind of short-term improvements. So we're going to be moving forward with those?
There could be some short-term reasons to put in place some of those short-term solutions. But that doesn't mean that the county or the state is going to take their eye off the ball for those ultimate solutions that would come out of this planning project.
All right, Tom, anything else you wanted to mention?
Just a couple mentions of boards. The library board is recruiting with a closing on that recruitment on March 3rd. And service area number 5 is recruiting for a spot, and that closes on March 10th.
All right. Tom, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. We have a report of a home fire at 1800 Homestake, the Homestake condominiums there. This has apparently been caused by a wood-burning stove. We've got the fire department there on site, but Homestake Road is closed. Please avoid the area. You're going to, of course, probably see a lot of the emergency vehicles as you drive there along Kearns Boulevard. Homestake, again, blocked off. Several units have been evacuated. We will give you more information when we receive it. But again, please avoid the area there on Homestake Road. We have got one of the units on fire caused by a wood-burning stove. The Christian Center of Park City is offering a 5-week small group teen girls resiliency group. On the phone with details is Katie Thomas, who will be a licensed clinical mental health counselor when she finishes her master's degree next month. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning.
So you've titled this series Phases. So tell us who's it for and what it is that you'll be doing.
Yeah, so this group is for teenage girls in grades 7 through 12. And it is designed just to support the girls in Park City and surrounding areas, using the different phases of the moon and kind of tying that in with the skills that will be taught.
Okay, so how many girls can you take?
So we're going to be offering 2 different sessions, and each session will have up to 12 girls. And this group will be in person following COVID guidelines and safety protocol.
Yeah, why did you think it was important to meet in person?
Yeah, so over the last few months, as I've been doing individual therapy with a bunch of teenagers, the continued and constant complaint is just the disconnection and the isolation that's been happening, especially those students that are doing all of their schooling online or constantly having to be quarantined. And so just creating an environment where people can connect face-to-face, I just think is really important as first of all, very important for teenage development. And then as we're trying to continue through COVID, trying to create some normalcy, even though it's just been such a difficult year.
Okay, so it's a 5-week series every Tuesday in March. And you've kind of split it up for 10th to 12th graders are starting from 3:15 to 4:30, and then 7th through 9th graders meeting from 5 to 6:15 p.m. And again, that's just based on their school schedules. There is a price for this. How much?
The price is $150, which breaks down to about $30 a session, and we will be offering scholarship if people are in need of finances. We don't want money to be a barrier to a teen participating in this group.
Yeah. So is there a, is this course kind of part of what you're doing to finish your master's degree? Is that part of this?
No, I just have a passion for doing group therapy. I've been doing it since 2014. I am a recreational therapist first before pursuing my clinical mental health counseling degree. And so I love experiential therapy, and I love getting people together and learning through activity and connection. And so that's what this group's going to just be about, where we can learn some skills. And the demand for therapy right now is so, so high that teens are on this long wait list. And my idea is that if we can have 12 people kind of learning these skills, that is 12 more people that is getting some sort of help or preventative care instead of just waiting on a wait list to see a clinician.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about this age group in particular and how confidence fits in.
Yeah, so confidence is a tough thing, especially with girls, and that's why I decided to just focus with teen girls right now. Right, there's COVID, and that's just hard because everything is even more online, and with being online, I think teens are especially exposed to a lot of information that maybe they wouldn't have been in years past or without social media, and so the comparison is such a difficult part of a teenager's life, and that comparison, you know, causes low self-esteem and low self-love and creates a lot of issues with body image and appearance, and then really deepens this idea of perfectionism, which I need to have a perfect body, or I need to be perfect in my school grades, or I need to be the perfect girlfriend or the perfect daughter. And so then it just creates a ton of stress, and that's not even accounting for if a girl has a history of trauma or has underlying anxiety and depression issues or academic issues. And so, yeah, I mean, it's hard to be a teenager. I don't want to go back to being a teenager, but I definitely love supporting teens and just helping provide them some support, some resources, some skills that they could maybe use to make life a little less difficult.
Yeah, I'm with you. You never want to go back. I mean, it's a terribly awkward time for both boys and girls. So,
absolutely.
And so why the focus on girls? Do they just take it a little bit too much, or more?
I think some of it's just a personal, you know, passion. I feel like I can connect to girls easier. I definitely don't want to undermine the need for boys groups. Also, boys are struggling equally academically, body image, all the same stuff, just in a different capacity. I just have a heart for teen girls, and I feel like I can connect with them easier. And then making it just a teen girls definitely eliminates all the hormones with boys being involved in a group therapy setting.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, I mean, it puts them in a very vulnerable position to share in a group setting like this. How do you ensure, though, that this is something that they can feel safe in?
Yeah, so our very first session is all about safety, and so that's addressed at the very start. We're starting with the new moon, and the new moon is kind of dark, and darkness can create, right, a sense of lack of safety. And so that's our whole first session, is talking about how to create safety in your environment, how we're going to create safety in a group setting, and how to establish safety within yourself.
Okay.
So, yeah.
What are you hoping that girls will get out of the five-week series?
Honestly, my goal for all of my practice is just increase self-love, increase self-worth, increase self-confidence, and just some tools for them to continue to find ways to love themselves instead of tear themselves down.
Okay, and then as you go on, the first week you said is safety. What else are you going to be exploring in the other 4 weeks?
Yeah, so next week would be about coping skills and support systems. The following week will be about building friends and how to be a good friend. The next week we'll be talking about boundaries, physical boundaries, as well as emotional boundaries. And then the following week will be a celebration of self and self-love, self-worth, and just boosting self-confidence.
It sounds like a pretty powerful 5 weeks. Are you hearing from girls willing to sign up?
Yep. So we just launched this, I think it was on Friday. And so getting back into the office, I'm going to be starting follow-up calls and excited to connect with people. The way that you can sign up is through Eventbrite. And then I call directly to sign up and do an intake and make sure that the team is a good fit for this group so that we create the best group that we can for the five-week series.
Okay.
There's a lot of research. Yeah, there's a lot of research that shows group therapy is even more effective than individual therapy because it allows the team to connect and not feel so alone. And so that's kind of part of my hope is just helping the teams know other teams are going through the same issues.
Okay. Again, so people can sign up by going to the website then?
Yep, you can. There's an Eventbrite page as well as just going to the Christian Center website and clicking under the mental health tab and counseling events.
Okay. And again, if people would like more information?
Yep, they can call the Christian Center directly and talk with Heather, and Heather will get them connected with me.
Okay. And again, there is a cost of $150 for the five-week series, but scholarships are available, and Heather can help them with that as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. Anything else, Katie, you'd like to mention?
Nope. I'm just really excited to be offering this resource to the community, and hopefully we get some high interest and help some teams.
Yeah. Okay. Katie, thanks for your time this morning. And the latest that we have with regard for those of you suffering some internet outage, UDOT accidentally tore out some 300 feet of primary and secondary fiber, feeding, among others, Wicked Fast and thousands of residents and businesses, including government buildings and hospitals. They were installing a sign on Interstate 15 in Lehigh yesterday. CenturyLink has a fiber repair team on site. They're saying that it should be fixed by 10 o'clock this morning before they have all 300 feet reconnected. So that's the latest on that outage. Again, we also have a fire department responding to a wood-burning stove fire in one of the Homestake condominiums at 1800 Homestake Road. That street is closed. You will not be able to get there, kind of the back way there to Fresh Market. Again, it's blocked off. Several units have been evacuated. We'll let you know as soon as we know more as well. Well, a recent public hearing hosted by the Oakley City Planning Commission on their revised development code drew just a couple of comments. KPCW's Rick Bruff reports that during the session, city officials talked about their ideas for affordable housing aimed at serving the South Summit area.
The Oakley Planning Commission formulated the code revisions during the six-month moratorium on new development. The proposed section on affordable housing would require that new residential development provide 20% of its units as affordable, and that new commercial projects provide affordable for 20% of its employee demand. During the February 16th public hearing, Oakley Planning Commissioner Doug Evans said they shouldn't put affordable requirements on small projects. He said he discussed the topic with Oakley Council Member Tom Smart.
Tom and I have talked that we may want to look at, rather than exacting an affordable housing component out of every subdivision, come up with what is the size of subdivision where we begin to do that. You know, I'm not sure it's worth taking a three-lot minor subdivision and saying you've got to put in so much affordable housing, but I don't know if the number is 10 or whatever. We need to think about it. And then I'm not sure how much Oakley wants to be in the business of actually, if the developer doesn't have a way to do it, of being the developers ourselves. Maybe we need to look at projects that are viable, where affordable housing can be implemented as a component of the project.
In the public comment, Justin Hardin agreed they shouldn't burden smaller projects, though he said that would not apply to a larger development he's pursuing right now with the city. Tom Smart said that providing affordable is a challenge.
And that's incredibly hard to do with the price of land. But as a council and with the ability to use the village center and things like that, we should be able to make the needs of the people who live and work around the valley and families in the valley. I don't think that any of us have a view that we should be affordable housing for Park City or other places.
He noted they have two factors in their favor.
The two biggest hammers that you have in affordable housing is zoning. And by having a village center where you can actually have some denser zoning and stuff like that, it is huge. And the second one is the accessory house dwelling, which, of course, you probably know is a big issue in the state right now. They might mandate for us all to have it.
Doug Evans added they also got two emails about the proposed code. One supported private property rights. The second talked about the value of their riparian areas centered on the Weber River. Evans seconded that message.
Because I'm a big advocate of protecting the river, as you know. I think that's the key. I think that's what sets Oakley apart from a lot of other places in the county, is we have a river that runs through it. And our job is to protect as much of that as possible while still maintaining property rights. The county and other cities are a little more generic on river stuff, but we could be a little bit more specific on protecting the river bottoms.
Oakley Planning Commissioner Doug Evans. For KPCW, I'm Rick Broth.
KPCW DJ and local singer-songwriter Wyatt Pike, one of the contestants on this season of American Idol. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Wyatt.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. So start just by telling us a little bit about yourself, introducing yourself to our listeners.
So I grew up in Park City. We moved here when I was three. Did a bunch of musical theater growing up through the Egyptian Theater and loved that. Slowly transitioned into music around junior high, started doing some school rock programs and that kind of thing. Speeding ahead here, I started gigging at places like the ski resorts and the lift lines, Black Diamond Lodge, Fuego Bistro. And so I've been doing that for a bunch of years now. I'm 20 today, actually.
Oh, happy birthday.
And thank you. And yes, I've been gigging forever and kind of learning to sing and play guitar through that and some lessons along the way. And then I released a 5-song record last year, so that's kind of where things are. And then back in November, I flew out to audition for American Idol.
Okay, so tell us, why was American Idol something you wanted to do?
Well, I grew up watching it, and I remember being in the living room watching Philip Phillips come out with a marching band and thought it was incredible. And that definitely sparked some guitar playing in my bedroom all night, keeping my sister and my parents up. And so it's always been something that I've looked at as a great platform to get some fans and make some connections with people through music. And when the opportunity came along, I couldn't say no. So,
yeah. So how does that opportunity happen? I mean, you just check their website and it's like, oh, they've got an audition. I'm going to go out.
Right. So yeah, this year they did an Idol Across America thing. I might be butchering that, but I hope not. Basically, you gave them some videos and things, and if they were interested in you, you ended up on a Zoom call with producers. And so that was the alternative to in-person auditions for every city in America. And so I ended up on a Zoom call with a bunch of producers and some music people from Idol, and I played a few songs. And at the end of that Zoom meeting, they invited me out to Ojai. So this Zoom was in October, and then they invited me to audition in front of the celebrity judges in November.
Okay, so you've made the first two cuts, really, right? I mean, you got through to the just somebody seeing your video, you got to a Zoom call, and now you're going to be in person. Do we know when that's going to happen?
Right, yeah, so I guess I did make it through that pre-producer round. They couldn't do it for everyone, obviously, with the COVID guidelines, so I'm happy to be in that. And then, yeah, I went out and auditioned, and I don't know exactly when I'll air yet, but it should be sometime in the next few weeks. It's on every Sunday.
Right, right. So can you talk about, I mean, I know you have to be very careful about what you can say, but can you tell us what song you auditioned with? I mean, was it at yours or one of yours, or was it a cover?
Yeah. So I actually went in with a song that I wrote that I released last year on that record I mentioned. It's called Best for You. I wrote it about my sister and figured that was a great one to kind of share the story of who I was and that I'm a writer and a singer and a guitar player. And so I went in and played that as best I could, and don't want to reveal the results by accident, but it was awesome.
Yeah. So you had your guitar with you? Is that what you used? Because I know that they've got like a piano that you could use if you wanted.
Right. Yeah, I brought my guitar with me. There's a bunch of craziness that happens flying with guitars. That's the worst. But brought it out there and had my guitar, which was nice.
Okay. Now, do you just show up, go in wearing what you want? I mean, is there some wardrobe and makeup available for you at, you know, as part of a TV show?
You're definitely on your own for wardrobe and makeup. They do have some guidelines on no small patterns, that kind of thing, because it's tricky with the cameras and TV. So I had to keep that in mind. But, yeah, I was allowed to wear what I wanted. So I went in with my usual flannel and the hat that I like to wear when I sing. Keeps the hair out of my eyes. So felt comfy in my own clothes.
Sure, yeah. Did you meet any of the other contestants?
I did, yeah. It was, we all had to keep our social distance and masks and that kind of thing to keep everyone safe. So it wasn't as much of a meet and greet as maybe it has been in the past years, but I definitely met a lot of fantastic singers, a couple from Utah, actually. They were down from Ephraim, I think. Met tons of people, got a lot of Instagrams and phone numbers, and it was definitely an awesome networking opportunity.
Yeah. So do you have a sense of what the judges are looking for? I mean, is it just the whole package, or is it just the voice? Is it the look? Or
I think so. And I don't really know, but I went in with the mindset that I wanted to show them that I could sing, but also that I could play guitar, because that kind of goes hand in hand, at least for me. And also I wanted to tell a story and explain who I was and that I'm a writer and that kind of thing. And so I think they are looking for as much of the whole package as possible. But of course, that if someone's a great singer and maybe isn't a writer, maybe they're a better singer and less of a writer, and that's that full package. And so I think everyone's package is a little bit different, but I think they're definitely looking for a full package.
Yeah. Now, we had to run this through a publicist of yours, so I guess my understanding is that all of the competitors are issued a publicist. What is it that they help you with?
Her name's Sammy. Yes, we went through her. She's just helping me to make sure I don't accidentally say something I'm not supposed to. As with anything, there's the details, like whether I made it through or not, that I can't share yet. So she's just making sure that I'm on top of that, and it's good to have her.
Yeah. So again, where are we in the process? We don't know what Sunday you'll show up.
Yeah, and so they'll let me know. For now, it's we just might see me each week, and so I'm tuning in, hoping to see myself. But I believe some of the show is pre-taped. They're airing all the auditions right now. Those were back in December, November. After that, we'll kind of see what happens, but auditions have definitely all been taped. So,
okay, so you'll let us know so we can pass that on.
I certainly will.
Okay.
Totally.
And I guess, how hard is it not to say anything? I mean,
it
throws
tough.
You out of the competition, right?
Right, yeah. Well, I'm definitely not supposed to share it. That's what I know. It's tricky because all my family and friends and people I know in Park City are all excited to hear whether I made it through or not. And while I know I can't share it, and I get in a little bit of trouble if I do. So it's definitely a tough secret to keep, but one I'm excited to share as soon as I can.
Sure. And I guess just the longer you're on, the more exposure you get. At what point do you think those that could really help move your career forward start watching the show? I mean, do you think they kind of pay attention all along?
I think so. I've seen some of the contestants I met in Ojai. I've seen some of their auditions and how their social medias are getting boosts and that kind of thing. And I think just making it to the audition,
that's going to be great for my career as far as getting some traction with fans and people watching me. And regardless of how far I do or do not make it in this show, I'm super excited. So,
okay. Well, before we get to your go out with your song, Best For You, anything else you'd like to tell us?
I don't think so, other than tune in Sundays, ABC, 8, 7 Central. So,
okay.
Should be fun. There's a lot of great talent this year.
All right. Rooting for you. Good luck, Ryan.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you. And that's Wyatt Pike, again, one of the contestants on this year's American Idol. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. A reminder that the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission tonight will be hosting a public hearing on the Highland Flats development. It's proposing 410 residential units on property located between Highland Drive and Silver Creek. The Snyderville Planning Commission meeting on Zoom. They'll be convening between 4:30 and 6 on possible amendments to the General Plan and Development Code. There are three other applications on the schedule before the public hearing. The applicants, again, are asking for a general plan amendment and rezone, which would change the site from rural residential, which currently calls for a very low density, to community commercial. The proposal is made up of two parcels, adding up to nearly 42 acres. It also includes a church site as well as the residential development. All of the units are rentals. The density would be 144 affordable units, ranging from 80% to 30% area median. Of the remainder, the 162 would be moderate income. Commissioners have to consider if the project complies with the provisions of the Snyderville Code, which say that an amendment will not affect the character of the surrounding area in a way that is adverse, unreasonable, or burdensome. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City.